Good morning, everyone. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for Wednesday, November 27, 2019. We're reading to you from our studio located at French Pavin in Fort Dodge. My name is Peggy, and my partner at the microphone is Doug. We'll start with a look at today's weather and headlines from the front page. First, pay it frozen. Movie patrons get free show. Next, threatening message received at Manson Northwest Webster School. Next, funding approved for 10-mile paving project. The Tanner King trial, defense's last witness reluctantly takes the stand. And last is two fires remain under investigation. Today's weather forecast, you can expect a high of 29 degrees with a low of 17. And snow mixed with freezing rain and northeast winds of 17 to 22 miles per hour. And now here's Doug with our first article.
Well, good Wednesday morning. This first article is by Hans Madsen. It's entitled Pay It Frozen. For families who went to see the afternoon and early evening showings of the movie Frozen 2 on Tuesday, there were a couple of surprises in store for them at the Fort 8 Theater. Kind of a nice thing. The first surprise, several characters from the show were on hand to greet them. The second, their tickets to see the show had been paid for by Unity Point Health. Kind of chokes me up. Trinity Regional Medical Center and staff. Unity Point's Alyssa Stanig, Senior Marketing and Communications Specialist, was enjoying watching the young moviegoers pose with Anna, Elsa, Olaf, their characters from the film. We're here to celebrate the giving season and show our appreciation to the community, she said. We're paying it forward. We are paying for people's Frozen 2 movie tickets. She said the staff has spent the entire month holding various drives to benefit the community, including collecting clothing and food. Our team is dedicated to the cause, she said. Blaze Zach, 4, of Fort Dodge, was a little shy about meeting Elsa, portrayed by registered nurse Jessica Smith. She wasn't shy about getting to see the movie, though. He shouted, "Yay!" and then jumped up and down. His mom, Rose Zach, appreciated the tickets. "That's amazing," she said. "It's very seasonal. To say that the Frozen movies, both 1 and 2, are very popular with children is perhaps a grand understatement." And now I gotta look for page 5 to continue. Here we are. Amy Coleman, a recruiter with Unity Point Health, brought her two children, Charlotte Coleman, 4, dressed as Elsa, and Penelope Coleman, 6, dressed as Anna, to help. "I've seen it 5, 6, 7, 8 times," Penelope Coleman said. Her mom disputes that figure. "It's probably closer to 100 times," she said. "That's just the first one, Frozen 2. Was on for later. We're going tonight," she said. Laura and Rich Sanchez of Fort Dodge both appreciated being able to see the film for free with their daughter, Malia Sanchez, who is 3. "I really appreciate anybody that wants to give back," Laura Sanchez said. Rick Sanchez was excited to see the film. "I get into her shows," he said. "They've watched Frozen many times at home, but he doesn't quite have the script memorized yet. Not all of it," he said. That's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. And next is threatening message received at Manson Northwest Webster by Chad Thompson. A threatening message was received Tuesday by the Manson Northwest Webster School District. The district announced to parents in an email, No incidents were reported at the schools Tuesday. The threatening message read, "At your school today, there will be a shooting." That message was apparently sent through an app called LMK to other students. One of the students informed school administration of the threat. The message was shared with the Webster County Sheriff's Office. "We have no information indicating that this message was genuine," Manson Northwest Webster Superintendent Justin Daggert said in an email. "We will follow our standard safety procedures." The school district said its school buildings are always locked and were on Tuesday. Deputies with the Webster County Sheriff's Office responded to the elementary school in Barnum, while the Manson Police Department sent officers to the high school. The schools encourage parents to talk with their children about safe and responsible use of social media.
Next article is funding approved for 10-mile paving project by Chad Thompson. A 10-mile paving project from Webster County Road P-59 along Route D-20 to the Hamilton County line is on tap for next summer. On Tuesday, the Webster County Board of Supervisors approved an Iowa Department of Transportation funding agreement for that project. According to Jamie Wohl, Webster County engineer, the DOT will fund $1.6 million through SWAP money. "We get federal aid money that comes in," Joel said. "We get a certain amount every year. There's a lot of strings and red tape. What the Iowa DOT does is swap that money. We take our federal aid money and spend it and gives us an equal number of dollars of state money so we can spend the money without so many strings attached to us." I don't know. Joel said the remainder of the project will be funded through the farm to market account. The total project cost is about $2.6 million. "We will mill off an inch and a half of existing road and put back 2 1/2-inch lifts of fresh asphalt." Well, that's the surface then, huh? A public letting for the project will be posted in March. In other business, supervisors adopted a resolution to establish speed limits on Route 6, C-66, and County Road P-29 near Clear. Almost all of the small towns step down in the speed limits as you come into town, Joel said. "We have been working closely with the city and believe they will pass a similar resolution at their next council meeting." Joel said the speed limit will change from 55 to 40 miles an hour as drivers approach Clare. Once in Clare, the speed limit will be 25 miles an hour. The board also determined the next Lehigh City Council member. To do that, two names, Gary Christensen and Gabe Walker, were written on separate slips of paper and placed in a hat. Supervisor Nikki Conrad was tasked with drawing one name. This continues to the procedure occurred because there was a tie between the two candidates. Walker's name was drawn from the hat. Walker has to report to the Lehigh City Council within 10 days, or the spot will become vacancy.
And next, two fires remain under investigation, written by Kelby Wingert. Fort Dodge has had five major structure fires in the past 2 weeks, all unrelated and all with different causes, Fort Dodge Fire Department Chief Steve Hergenritter said. The causes of the fires have ranged from a candle left unattended to electrical problems to a child playing with a lighter. However, two of the fires are still under investigation, the chief said. A house fire at 934 South 27th Street was reported at 11:43 p.m. on November 17. That fire reportedly sent flames up to 50 feet in the air. The home received severe damage from the fire, and the fire destroyed an attached two-car garage and damaged a camper trailer that was parked next to the garage. Two nearby garages sustained significant exterior damage, while some siding was melted on a house across the street. The cause of that fire is still under investigation, Hergenritter said. Another fire that remains under investigation was reported around 5 a.m. on November 24 at a home at 1531 L Street. Crews were greeted with heavy amounts of fire throughout the house and through the roof of the rear of the structure. Firefighters were able to contain and extinguish the fire before it spread to neighboring homes. No injuries were reported in either fire. Other recent fires occurred at a garage at 412 North 16th Street on the afternoon of November 17, an apartment building at 2809 10th Avenue North on the evening of November 19, and a home at 1628 North 26th Street on Saturday night. And next is Wood to resign from Sheriff's Office.
This is by Chad Thompson. Webster County Sheriff's Deputy Justin Wood may soon be wearing a different law enforcement uniform. That one includes a brown campaign hat. On Tuesday, the Webster County Board of Supervisors approved Wood's resignation from the Webster County Sheriff's Office. His resignation is effective on Friday. Webster County Sheriff Jim Stubbs reported that Woods has accepted a position with the Iowa State Patrol. If that's a better fit for him, it's a better fit, Stubbs said. Woods was a deputy in Webster County for a little more than 2 years. Supervisors authorized Stubbs to fill the vacancy left by Woods. In other business, the board accepted the resignation of Christina Swanson, Support Recovery Aid, the resignation of Melissa Grill, registered nurse for Webster County Public Health, was also approved. Jeffrey Fox was hired as a full-time engineering technician at an hourly rate of $27.97. That hire was effective today.
And next is the state in history. The poll first, the Messenger poll. Do you watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? You can vote at messengernews.net. The state in history by the Associated Press. Today is Wednesday, November 27, the 331st day of 2019. There are 34 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On November 27, 1978, San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and City Supervisor Harvey Milk, a gay rights activist, were shot to death inside City Hall by former Supervisor Dan White. White served 5 years for manslaughter. He committed suicide in October 1985. On this date, 1924, Macy's first Thanksgiving Day parade, billed as a Christmas parade, took place in New York. In 1973, the Senate voted 92-3 to confirm Gerald R. Ford as vice president, succeeding Spiro T. Agnew, who'd resigned. In 1998, answering 81 questions put to him 3 weeks earlier, President Clinton wrote the House Judiciary Committee that his testimony in the Monica Lewinsky affair was not false and misleading. In 2003, President Bush flew to Iraq under extraordinary secrecy and security to spend Thanksgiving with U.S. troops and thank them for defending the American people from danger. 10 years ago, Tiger Woods crashed his SUV outside his Florida mansion, sparking widespread attention to reports of unfaithfulness to his wife, Aline Nordegren. The couple divorced the following year. 5 years ago, reflecting its lessening oil clout, OPEC decided to keep its output target on hold and sit out falling crude prices. 1 year ago, President Donald Trump threatened to cut off all federal subsidies to General Motors because of its planned massive cutbacks in the U.S. The thought for today from Eugene O'Neill, man's loneliness is but his fear of life. Again, Eugene O'Neill, American playwright, born 1888, died this date in 1953. And next is County Approves Wi-Fi Upgrades.
And that's written by Chad Thompson. Webster County will have greater control over its guest network, among other things, with upgrades to its Wi-Fi system, according to Andy McGill, the county IT director. The Webster County Board of Supervisors on Tuesday reviewed and placed on file the IP pathway quote for $12,132 for 26 MR33 and 4 MR42 access points to replace the current Wi-Fi that is throughout the county buildings. Supervisors also approved the IP pathways quote for the amount of $9,360 for statement of work to upgrade the software for vSphere and NetApp on tap. A lot of initials. We are wanting to go with a more robust system, McGill said. In areas less populated in the offices, we are going to go with the MR33, which is the bulk of what we have. The MR42 is more high density. We'll get two over to the bank building and one outside this door here. McGill said the county has more than 30 access points throughout all of its buildings. The new system is a cloud-based utility. I don't have to be here on site to see what's going on, McGill said. I can look at it through a cloud-based utility. I've been testing one that we had for a while. It worked really well. He added, I like the guest version of it. We can lock it down so they have no access to our network whatsoever. We can lock down bandwidth. We can see who is on it, who's not on it. It's a much better product than what we currently have. It works for us, for the ones who are on the secure site. The guest site has been really iffy for us, and we really want to shore that up. The units we have now are 6 or 7 years old, starting to fail us. McGill said the upgrades didn't have anything to do with the city's pursuit of a separate broadband utility. This is just the Wi-Fi we have in our buildings here, McGill said. We got a really good deal on these units. They are a Cisco-based company. They are more high-end. In other business, the board added McGill to its urban renewal area. According to Mark Campbell, chairman of the board, the county will be reimbursing Cargill over the next 5 years for future expansion. The urban renewal area is anything that the county can collect tax increment financing on.
Next, defense's last witness reluctantly takes the stand. By Elijah Deaches. So, you're willing to say whatever it takes to cover up for Cleto Clark. Lead defense attorney Paul Rounds asked his final witness Tuesday before closing statements in the first-degree murder trial of Tanner King. Yes, Megan White replied softly. Could you speak up, please? Rounds asked for about the fifth time since she took the stand. I said yes, White snapped back at him, visibly agitated. The defense's final witness, the girlfriend of Cleto Clark, proved to be one of its most substantial in bolstering any consideration of reasonable doubt the defense has attempted to assemble before the jury goes into deliberation next week. King faces two first-degree charges in the shooting of L. Dominic and Marion Rhodes on October 22, 2018. Their bodies were found in the alley behind his former apartment building near 9th Street and 3rd Avenue North. The defense tied up the last of its loose ends Tuesday, the trial's 11th day, to finish the bow on its theory that Clark was the actual killer, taking out a hit on the Rhodes brothers as a result of bad blood between them and Johnny Young of Kansas City. The defense's last witness was riddled with eye rolls before they could rest their case. F you and your subpoena, Rounds said, she texted their investigator after failing to show up hours after she was told to be in court. It was a response that District Court Judge Kurt Stobey couldn't help but chuckle at after two long weeks of heightened tension between state and defense attorneys. White showed up before lunch, just as the judge was preparing to sign her arrest warrant, the second one he would have signed in this trial. Clark's aunt, Jermiriel Love, had to be transported Monday to Story County by Steve Wally Alfredis, Webster County Jail Administrator, after she refused to come on her own volition. While conceded not only that she initially lied to investigators, but that she had previously lied under oath in a deposition prepared for this very trial. She was their second witness to openly acknowledge being a liar under oath in open court. White's car, a white Lincoln MKS, was seen in surveillance footage driving around the murder scene at about the same time as the shootings. In transcripts of detective interviews read to the jury, Clark acknowledged he drove it to the scene of the shooting. Initial police reports indicated the car was hit by a bullet at the scene when King allegedly took a failed shot at Clark. An attempted murder charge for the matter was dropped before the trial started. White indicated per previous depositions that she was of the opinion her former lover has lied frequently to her and has been untruthful. Defense attorneys have previously asserted that Clark's early interviews with Detective Larry Hadlin of the Fort Dodge Police Department were instrumental in the decision to charge King less than four full days after the shooting. The investigation details she provided early on were called into question. The morning after the shooting, she told Hedlund privately that she was driving the car that night because she was fooling around with another man. Tuesday, she admitted that story was a false lead that Clark told her to say. In a sworn statement just days after the shooting, White also claimed that Clark came around 12:15 a.m. the night of the shooting and divulged that he had been in an argument with King. I tried to help them. I tried to make sure they were okay, but they weren't, so I got out of there, she quoted Clark as saying previously. Another quote she allegedly claimed Clark said to her was that the argument at the murder scene started because somebody was a snitch, the victims, and that one of the Rhodes brothers reached for their waistband. Rounds pointed out that her statements to police also never verified any of Clark's claims that he was shot at. Having laid the foundation for a pattern of lies in investigation of both the murder case and Clark's armed robbery of Applebee's just a month prior, which he has since been convicted of, Rounds started to poke holes in other things too. Rounds once again attempted to pique the jury's curiosity as to whether the gun used in the Applebee's robbery could have been the murder weapon believed to be a .40 caliber handgun. The state rebutted on cross-examination that the one in the robbery was a 9mm and was verified by Special Agent Ray Fiedler of the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation as having nothing to do with the bullets found in this shooting. Rounds also questioned why White and friend Jade Wetzel, who previously testified that they left King's apartment terrified after he placed a shotgun and shells in front of them at a table, was even at King's apartment after the shooting. Knowing Tanner was a cold-blooded killer who tried to kill Cleto, you decided to go hang out with him, he asked. You and Jade would go over and hang out at the house of a cold-blooded killer. He also pressed her on the details of the holster, waistband, and handguns she may or may not have seen. She previously told Hedlund that she didn't remember seeing a holster and that the handle of the gun she did see was silver. Wetzel, a state witness, said on cross-examination that she thought the handle was maybe black. Eyewitness Margaret Seiler, who said she saw King running down the street with a gun in his hand moments after hearing shots, said the object he was holding in one hand did not reflect light in the dark street lit with a nearby street lamp. White said she has never seen Clark with a gun. Jail phone calls and depositions verified that she has continued to profess Clark's innocence in the Applebee's robbery ever since his conviction. Clark has multiple convictions related to burglary, theft, and the use of firearms. I am in love with him, she confirmed to Rounds, even though she stopped talking frequently to Clark, who is now serving time in prison several months ago. King previously provided information to police that helped convict White's younger brother. The timing of the trial, with its unexpected delays and interruptions, has been short of optimal. Jurors, previously told they would be finished before Thanksgiving, were dismissed until Monday. I don't want them to rush, to deliberate before the holiday, Stobie said. Defense and state attorneys will work Wednesday to hash out jury instructions. I have to write jury instructions, and they're quite lengthy. They're quite extensive, Stobie told the jury. My plan is to submit this to you on Monday. On Monday, the state and defense will present their closing arguments, anticipated to take about 6 hours total. Attorneys may clash Wednesday on the criteria with which to instruct the jury on how to reach a guilty verdict for first-degree murder. In two motions to dismiss the case, the defense has highlighted its belief that the state has not met its burden of proof required to demonstrate that King committed first-degree murder. We renew our motion for acquittal on grounds that the state has not provided sufficient evidence of premeditation, deliberation, and malice aforethought, defense attorney Catherine Flickinger said Tuesday, the legal definition of first-degree murder. Soon the jury will be able to decide how much weight to grant White's testimony and whether the state has met that burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And next is the community calendar.
Community calendar. Fort Dodge Civitan Club is 7 a.m. at Zakir's. Guests are welcome. Golden K Kiwanis, 9:30 a.m. Tompkins Celebration Center, Friendship Haven. The program, Pastor Jennifer Alsheim Owen, Thanksgiving Message. KYL Preschool Storytime, 10:05 to 10:35 a.m. at the Kendall Young Library in Webster City. Blandon Memorial Art Museum is 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., 920 3rd Avenue South. Admission is free. Fort Dodge Senior High Class of 1953, 11:30 a.m. at the Sports Page. Fort Dodge Senior High Class of 1955, 11:30 a.m. at the Sports Page. Noon Lions is noon at the Lions Den. A.A. Alano Club, noon and 7 p.m., 12 North 7th Street. Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge Club, 1 p.m., open game at Citizens Central. Nickel Bingo, 1 p.m., multipurpose senior center, Emmitsburg. Bets Off, Gamblers Anonymous, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., Community and Family Resources, 726 South 17th Street. Open AA Meeting, 7 p.m. at St. Mark's Episcopal Church, Fox Hall, 1001 South 1st Avenue. AA, 7 p.m., Open Meeting, 510 South Jackson, Eagle Grove. And a couple announcements on this page. The Sandstone Prime Rib, cooked and ready for Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas dinner, is available now at Sawyer's Meats, 414 2nd Avenue, 515-576-5331. Whole is $180. It serves 16 adults. And half is $95. It serves 8 adults. Beef jerky is $6, and gift certificates are available. That's Sawyer's Meats. There's a Black Friday Small Business Saturday sale, 50% off Christmas entire store. Buy one, get one half off. Friday, November 29th and Saturday, November 30th. Hours are 10 to 4 p.m. Uptown Elegance in Clare, Iowa. Come join us for lunch at Zakir's. Wednesday is Sloppy Joe's. Thursday is closed. And Friday is Butterfly Shrimp. Zakir's, 425 2nd Avenue South. Tom Thumb, the weekly special is a taco salad for $6.44. Monday, November 25th through Sunday, December 1st, 1412 A Street West.
You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and 3 o'clock p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, you can give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now we turn to today's obituaries.
The first obituary is Marjorie J. Thompson. Marjorie J. Thompson, 95, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Tuesday, November 26, 2019, at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements have been entrusted to Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Marjorie Thompson, the daughter of Devere and Bertha Pollock Christman, was born on July 12, 1924, near Vinton, Iowa. Marjorie was united in marriage to Glenn O. Thompson on August 29, 1943, in Van Horn, Iowa. They have been happily married for 76 years. Marjorie was active in the EUB and the United Methodist Churches. She held many local and district offices with the United Methodist Women. She also volunteered for Heifer Project International in Arkansas for many years. Marjorie was instrumental in the reorganization of the Fort Dodge Lord's Cupboard. Marjorie loved and appreciated all the care she received at Friendship Haven. She was a loving wife, mother, and grandmother. Marjorie is survived by her husband, Glenn, children, Michael and Lee Bowman Thompson, Beth Isold and Gail Reed, grandchildren, Michelle and Eddie McFarland, Eric and Amy Thompson, Brian and Amanda Reed, and Matthew and Marcia Reed, six great-grandchildren, one great-great-grandchild, and several nieces and nephews. Marjorie was preceded in death by her parents, Devere and Bertha Crisman, sons-in-law, Dick Isold and John Reed, and her siblings, Jay, Lyle, Maxine, and Audrey. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Good Samaritan Fund at Friendship Haven.
Next is Beverly Musselman, 83. Beverly J. Musselman of Fort Dodge passed away Sunday, November 24, 2019 at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 30th at Loffersweiler Seavers Funeral Home. Entombment will follow at the North Lawn Mausoleum. A visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Beverly is survived by her children, Michelle Palmer, Renee Peterson, Lee Musselman, and Russell Musselman, all of Fort Dodge, 10 grandchildren and 19 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, Victor S. and Lois A. Fuller Williams, husband Raymond in 1999, son Victor Musselman, and grandson Nicholas Palmer. Beverly Jane Williams was born December 31, 1935 in Menlo, Iowa. As a young child, Bev and her family moved from the Stuart-Menlo-Redfield area to Spencer and continued her education. They eventually moved to Fort Dodge, and she graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High School. Following her education, Bev was employed with Lutheran Hospital in Fort Dodge and later State Bank In 1953, she was united in marriage to Raymond Musselman. The couple made their home in Fort Dodge. Bev was a homemaker and proud caretaker of her family. She also worked for Lamplighter, Sandstone, and later the Last Chance Saloon. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be left to the American Cancer Society.
Evelyn B. Bittner, Pocahontas. Evelyn B. Bittner, age 97, of Pocahontas, passed away Monday, November 25, 2019, at the Lorenz Care Center in Lorenz, Iowa. Funeral services are 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 2, 2019, at the Resurrection of Our Lord Catholic Church in Pocahontas, with Father Craig Collison officiating. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery in Pocahontas, Iowa. Visitation is 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. on Monday, December 2, 2019, at the church. Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas, Iowa, is handling arrangements. For online condolences and obituaries, visit powersfh.net.
Joanne B. Kemp, Lorenz. Joanne B. Kemp, age 82, of Spencer, formerly of Lorenz, died Monday, November 25, 2019, at the St. Luke's Lutheran Hospital in Spencer, Iowa. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 30, 2019, at the United Methodist Church in Lorenz, Iowa, with Pastor Ed Frank officiating. Burial will be in Lorenz Cemetery near Lorenz, Iowa. Visitation will be 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 30th at the church. The Powers Funeral Home in Lorenz, Iowa is handling arrangements. Next is Jeremy Smith. Jeremy Smith, 42, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Tuesday, November 26, 2019 at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. Services are pending. Loffersweiler Seaver's Funeral Home is serving the family. Irma Wallstrom Manson. Irma Wallstrom, 85, died at Humboldt North Care Center on Monday, November 25, 2019. Services are pending at Larson Wyrshire Funeral Home in Manson. Glenn Wergeland, Humboldt. Glenn E. Wergeland of Humboldt passed away on Tuesday morning, November 26, 2019, at his home. Arrangements are pending at the Mason Lindhart Funeral Home in Humboldt. Dwayne Cleveland. Memorial services for Dwayne A. Cleveland, 45, of Fort Dodge, are 1 p.m. Sunday at First Baptist Church, Fort Dodge. Betty Pillman Ziering. Betty Pillman, 66, died on November 13, 2019. Services were held on November 21 at St. John Lutheran, Lizard Township. And announcements from Loffersweiler and Seaver's Funeral Home at 307 South 12th Street. Beverly J. Musselman, age 83, funeral is 10:30 a.m. Saturday at Loffersweiler Funeral Home. Visitation is 4 to 7 p.m. Friday. And Jeremy Smith, age 42, services are pending. And now for the Messenger editorial.
Messenger editorial is titled, "It's Time to Protect Our Veterans." Senator Joni Ernst seeks to stop scams that target American patriots. America's veterans have contributed greatly to our nation's success. Their service, and in many cases, exceptional sacrifices, are a source of pride to all to all right-thinking citizens. It's hard to believe that as aging veterans seek to avail themselves of the government benefits earned through their patriotic endeavors, Some unscrupulous individuals and companies seek to exploit their vulnerability. Unfortunately, a new report from the Federal Government Accountability Office, usually referred to as simply the GAO, reveals a disgusting scandal. The GAO concludes that as many as 200 companies are charging veterans excessive fees for assistance in helping them secure essential benefits to which their service entitles them. All too often, entities not properly accredited by the Department of Veterans Affairs are taking advantage of the need aging veterans have for assistance to impose unreasonable and unmerited fees for that help. U.S. Senator Joni Ernst is demanding government action to protect these American heroes. She is urging her colleagues in Congress to quickly pass the Financial Refuge and Every Elderly Veteran Act. It's called FREE. Veterans in Iowa and across the country are owed the benefits they've earned in service to our country, and anyone attempting to take advantage of these heroes for financial gain should not only be ashamed of themselves, but face serious consequences, Ernest said. This bill will protect our veterans from these pension poachers, assist those veterans who have fallen prey, and ensure taxpayer dollars are being spent wisely at the VA. The Iowa Republican also chastised her fellow lawmakers for failing to address this problem sooner. There's simply no excuse for that, and I hope my colleagues will take action now, Ernst said. The messenger strongly agrees this legislation needs prompt approval. The proposed legislation would provide education to veterans about these unsavory scams, alert them to the danger. It also establishes severe penalties for individuals or companies found guilty of exploiting veterans. Those offenders would be subject to major fines and possible imprisonment. Ernst, herself a combat veteran, has become an important champion of the U.S. military and of those heroes who have worn nation's uniforms. Her tireless efforts on behalf of veterans help make sure that others in Congress don't overlook the importance of government action to aid veterans. She also is determined to protect veterans from charlatans who would exploit their vulnerabilities as they grow older. We commend Ernst for her important work on behalf of these American patriots.
Okay, and now we'll move on to the sports. First, Dillon inducted into Hall of Fame. Matt Dillon was honored earlier this year with his induction into the Dowling Catholic High School Athletic Hall of Fame. Dillon, the current St. Edmund head football coach, was enshrined alongside Elliot Baker, Jessica Campbell, Claudia Farrell, Tom Gall, Eric Lee, Lincoln Minx, and Carissa Schweitzer. He also joined his son, Zach Dillon, as part of the exclusive club. Zach was inducted 2 years ago. One of those was Chuck Knight, who was the principal at North Polk and hired Dillon for his first coaching job in 1982. It was just really special that Chuck and his family were able to be there, Dillon said. Dillon recently completed his second season with St. Edmund and his 33rd as a head coach. That includes a run with Dowling from 1996 to 2005 that featured back-to-back state championship teams in 2000 and 2001. He is the fourth head football coach to be honored with a spot in the Hall of Fame, joining Jim Williams, Bob Nizzi, and Don Morrow. It is great to be a part of that class of coaches, Dillon said. Dillon has been named Coach of the Year at his various stops 14 times and was a finalist for the State of Iowa Coach of the Year Award in both 97 and 1998, winning it in 2000. Before getting into coaching, Dillon was a player himself. earning a spot in the Cornell College Athletic Hall of Fame. He later was the head coach at Cornell. After being inducted, Dylan coached the Gales against Sioux Central for homecoming. The Dowling Hall of Fame was first created in 1995. All three of Dylan's children, Zach, Sammy, and Joe, are graduates of the school.
Next article is entitled All-State Legacy by Eric Pratt. 31 years ago, Astley Thorson's father, Tajaron, was named a first-team All-State football player at Fort Dodge Senior High. And 31 years before that, Tajaron's father, Sherwin, made the All-State squad as a Dodger. The family's symmetric lineage reached a historic level on Monday when Ashley earned second-team All-State honors in Class 4A after his senior year as a quarterback, defensive back, and punter for the Fort Dodge Senior High. Under normal circumstances, Thorson may have felt immense pressure to live up to the lofty expectations established by his forefathers on the gridiron. Not only were his dad and grandpa both stars, but Ashley's other grandfather, Sam Mosier, had a Hall of Fame career as a player and coach, and Sam's son, Nick, earned All-State honors himself as a Dodger before becoming a starting defensive back at Iowa State University. Yet, Astley Thorson insists the only stress to perform at a higher level came from within. I remember as a little kid seeing my dad's name next to my grandpa's on the All-State list, and it became a goal of mine to join them, Thorson said. But not because they were saying, hey, this is going to be you next. If it was a topic of conversation with my family, it's because I brought it up. I was always taught to be my own person athletically and to do my own thing. They didn't want this for me. I wanted it myself. The 6'2" Thorson was a two-time first-team all-class 4A District 2 selection as a safety. This year, in addition to continuing his defensive responsibilities and carrying on the family name in the sport, Thorson took on the added challenge of replacing the school's statistical king, 2018 IFCA Class 4A Player of the Year, Drake Miller, as the Dodgers' starting quarterback. He did so admirably. Thorson completed 61% of his passes for over 1,600 yards and 17 touchdowns while rushing for 329 yards and 10 more scores. The 27 combined touchdowns tied for the top spot among 4A quarterbacks during the regular season. Fort Dodge went 6-3 and was a repeat playoff qualifier, and the Thorson family became the first in program history to have three generations of All-State football players. Thorson's motivation came from a much purer perspective, though. We had a great season, and obviously the All-State honor meant a lot to me, Thorson said. It's always been more about just being a Dodger in general, though. Growing up, I couldn't wait to put on that uniform. Thorson is undecided on his future plans, though he does have a preferred walk-on offer at Iowa State University that he called obviously very intriguing. Not only did Nick play there, but his older sister, Lear, is currently swimming for the Cyclones. For now, Thorson is a big proponent of staying as busy and active as possible. He's a current member of the Dodger basketball squad, and he qualified for the state track meet last spring.
All right. and for the police log for Fort Dodge on Saturday. Burglary was reported in the 2000 block of 3rd Avenue North. Assault reported in the 200 block of Avenue B. Trespass in the 1600 block of 1st Avenue North. Theft in the 1200 block of 1st Avenue South. Theft in the 1900 block of South 15th Street. Theft was reported in the 800 block of Kenyon Road. Assault in the 900 block of South 23rd Street. A fight was reported in the 200 block of North 1st Street. Criminal mischief in the 1600 block of North 24th Street. And theft in the 10 block of South 11th Street. On Sunday, assault was reported in the 300 block of South 4th Street. One domestic was reported. Burglary in progress was reported in the 400 block of Crestview Drive. Person with weapon in the 1600 block of 3rd Avenue South. Theft in the 1400 block of 25th Avenue North. A fight was reported in the 200 block of Avenue M West. A trespass in the 3000 block of 1st Avenue South. Harassment in the 100 block of Avenue E. And another fight in the 300 block of Avenue M West. On Monday, one domestic was reported. A trespass in the 900 block of Central Avenue. An assault at the Fort Dodge Middle School. Harassment was reported in the 400 block of 3rd Avenue South. Harassment in the 100 block of North 10th Street. A theft in the 1200 block of 1st Avenue South. Another theft reported in the 3000 block of 1st Avenue South. Burglary in the 2000 block 3rd Avenue North. Harassment in the 100 block of South 29th Street. Another theft in the 200 block of J Street. And now the magistrate court for Saturday. Probation violation, Brandon Ayala, 20, transferred to district court. Operating while intoxicated, Tamara Litson, 49. Preliminary hearing is scheduled for December 6. Failure to obey stop sign, Tamara Litson. That was continued 180 days. Driving while barred, Thomas Meeks, 23. Preliminary hearing is scheduled for December 6. Kayla Potter, 29. Preliminary hearing is November 29. Theft in the fourth degree, Benjamin Kinetz, 52. Transferred to district court. Intent to deliver methamphetamine, Kayla Potter. She's also charged with intent to deliver marijuana. Possession of a controlled substance, methamphetamine. Possession of a controlled substance, marijuana. Possession of drug paraphernalia. And operating without owner's consent. Monday, a burglary. Julian Edward Bachoven, 19. Preliminary hearing is scheduled for December 4. Sex offender registry violation, Jacob Kellum, Webster City. Preliminary hearing is scheduled for December 11. Assault, Kevin Joseph Konvalinka, 41. He was fined $195. Chelsea Lynn Carr was also charged with assault. The trial is scheduled for December 20th. Domestic assault, Antoine Lamont Wardham, Webster City. This hearing is scheduled for December 11. Voluntary absence from custody, Reno Roger Anderson, 27, transferred to district court. Violation of a no-contact order, John Jacob Kratz, 45, transferred to district court. Operating while intoxicated, first offense, Alfred Thomas Hibbs, 70. Preliminary hearing is December 6th. Driving while barred, Tricia Lynn Hall Gleam, 31. Her hearing is scheduled for December 6th. Shelley Joanne Harrison, 51. Hearing scheduled for December 6th. Driving under suspension, Jacob Cullum. Trial is December 20th. Trespassing, Jacob Cullum. That is also scheduled for December 20th. Voluntary absence from custody on Tuesday, Damian Wayne Sundin, 25, transferred to district court. And now the extended weather forecast.
The extended weather forecast says today is snow is likely. The high is around 29 and it'll go down to about 17 degrees. Tomorrow on Thursday, there's a chance of snow, high around 32 and the low will be around 28. Friday, snow is likely again, high around 39 and low around 34. And Saturday, rain, high around 44 and low around 24. On Sunday, snow is likely, high around 32 and low around 15. Monday might be sunny, high around 29 and low around 24. And Tuesday, partly sunny, high around 38 and low around 25.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. We thank Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home in Fort Dodge, and we thank you all for listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Wishing you all a dream to bless and a star to guide. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.